The Eagles take full advantage of the banged-up Cowboys. Drew Brees reminds everyone he can carry the Saints when he has to. The Vikings stake their claim to the title of NFC's best, and Ben McAdoo stakes his claim to keeping his job. We're breaking down all of Week 11 on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. Week 11, pretty much in the books here. NFC dominance continues to be sort of the storyline, Andy. And one thriller that we'll get to, but also a couple of the top teams just sort of asserting their dominance.
Yeah, we're starting to see, I don't like to say the playoff picture at this point because there's so many things that can happen. I guess we see those playoff graphics and almost every team is up there in the graphics at this point in the year. But the teams that are at the top of it are pretty well cemented at the top. There's some real powers in the NFL this season.
Yeah, well, I spent the entire weekend with the charts and the schedules. I've got the string and the thumbtacks going all over the cork boards here in my basement, so I got the whole playoff picture figured out. If anyone wants to skip the rest of the regular season, just go right to the postseason. But for now, we're going to start topic number one.
Number one.
That is the Sunday nighter. The Eagles start slow, and, you know, when this game got to halftime, Andy, I just sort of, I jotted in my notes, I put Rod Marinelli, ? I couldn't believe that a non-Sean Lee Cowboys defense was keeping the Eagles in check, and then immediately in the second half, that was no longer the case.
Yeah, it was strange, wasn't it? It was Dallas almost outplayed them through the first half. A lot of it was on the back end, their back seven, mm-hmm. and what those guys were doing in coverage. And then nothing really shifted in the game. There was no big moment. It's just late in the game you looked up and, oh, the Eagles had won by 28 points. They just started outplaying Dallas in the second half. Carson Wentz got hot. He made some plays late in the down, but their offense won within its structure. And what always stands out with Philadelphia, Gary, and I think it's standing out more each week, especially in their running game and with Jay Ajayi showing up, is just how many things they do. They are a very diverse offense. They have an expansive game out of three receivers and a deep intermediate passing game. They have a great play-action game. Their running game does more with gap scheme and trap blocks, and they run all kinds of zone. And then when they put two tight ends on the field with Trey Burton and Zach Ertz especially, they're extremely flexible, and they often get teams playing nickel defense against that. So that helps their running game out of two tight ends. That's a really expansive offense. And Doug Peterson, and I'm a big Sean McVay guy, as you know. Doug Peterson needs to be in the conversation for Coach of the Year and for best offensive coach in the NFL right now.
Absolutely. And I think that's been a big storyline this year, is he's kind of separated himself from the, he's Andy Reid Jr. He's just an Andy Reid disciple. And, you know, will he ever be able to come up with this kind of offense on his own? And hey, we've seen it this year.
Got a great QB to build around to that. I mean, it helps because there's nothing you can't do with a guy like Carson Wentz stylistically.
That one play in the second half, and I don't know if I actually can't remember exactly what the down and distance situation was, but he had a play where he sort of dodged a rush and mm-hmm. sort of escaped a little bit, and you know, as soon as he escaped, he was getting hit in the face by two guys and still just drilled a pass into Alshon Jeffrey for a first down. That's what he does.
Yeah, I love that, because then that's what we mean when we say guys that can extend plays without breaking down the play. Jeffrey continued his route on that. Nobody had to go run a separate route and reestablish themselves. That's the ability to extend the play within the context of the play. And that's what can't be taught, and that's what can't be defended when it's going really well. That's how you make guys around you better.
The other side of the ball here for the Eagles, defensively, they got Ronald Darby back tonight, and Sidney Jones is maybe on his way back as well. But, you know, if you were going to point out a weakness with this team, everyone looks at the secondary and the cornerback play. I mean, I know the Cowboys were without Tyron Smith tonight, but this front four has dominated all year, so it's almost like, does it even matter if Sidney Jones comes back, and does it really make that big a difference if Ronald Darby maybe is not quite 100% from here on in?
Well, and I thought Darby looked great tonight. If this is a preview of what Ronald Darby will be, then to answer your question, no, it won't matter that he's not 100% because his 85, his 90%, that looked pretty good. He outplayed Dez Bryant tonight, and he didn't always match up against Bryant. Darby's the right corner, and Jalen Mills is the left corner, but they've got two pretty good ones there, Patrick Robinson and Malcolm Jenkins. That gives them two types of slot guys, a bigger slot guy in Jenkins, a quicker one, and Robinson. And we saw it was Robinson tonight because they got Cole Beasley on the other side. There's some versatility in that secondary. McLeod and Jenkins are interchangeable safeties. So you have a dynamic four-man rush, and as Chris Collinsworth pointed out, you have two of them because they do full eight four-man rotations there, bringing in Barnett and Chris Long as the backup edge rushers. So great up front, you're adequate at linebacker, and then you're very multidimensional on the back end. That's the defense you have, and you play a scheme that lets everybody play fast. That's a defense that should be getting better as the season goes along.
Yeah, and as far as the Cowboys go, obviously, no Sean Lee, no Tyron Smith, though Ezekiel Elliott in this one. Albert Breer had written a column on Thursday sort of arguing that Elliott was the really big loss. I mean, they're all huge losses, but Elliott was the giant loss because it throws the entire offense off schedule. The ones that are 3-yard gains for Alfred Morris would have been 6-yard gains with Ezekiel Elliott. So you're facing, instead of second and four or five, you're looking at second to 7 and 8 and that sort of thing. But Byron Bell got the call at left tackle tonight. He was, he was better than Chaz Green last week, but still just not good enough. And you're kind of seeing Dak. It's tough. It hadn't been so tough the first year and a half of his career, but sort of all collapsing around him right now.
Yeah, and he's playing well, and it's just not enough. The other thing I think that isn't getting talked about, and I agree with Albert about the point on Elliott, the only argument I'd make, and Tyron Smith's going to be back anyway, so we don't need to elaborate too much on that, but when you take him out of the lineup, you do have to change the way you play. And that's all we've talked about, how that's always a big deal with injuries. Last year when Gronkowski went down, we said, great player, maybe the best ever, in fact, at his position. But with Martellus Bennett there, the Patriots don't have to change the way they play. They just won't be as dynamic in how they play, but they're still doing the same stuff. That's true with Alfred Morris in for Elliott. To a degree, there's a few things Morris can't do that Elliott does. But that's not true when you remove Tyron Smith. You do have to change the way you play there. You have to slide your protections differently, give chip block help. As we saw, they played out of two tight ends, more than three receivers at times tonight. So that's a big loss. But I think, Gary, that one of the things that has kind of subtly stood out with Dallas, and it's going to be true when Tyron Smith is back, hopefully for the Thanksgiving game, their wide receivers aren't as good as they were a year ago. Dez Bryant's, if you didn't know who Dez Bryant was and you just watched him this season, you wouldn't think twice about him. And Cole Beasley has not been as productive from the slot. Yeah. Some of that's just the nature of the offense. But those wideouts haven't put up the same kind of numbers or been the same weapons. They complemented each other so well a year ago. Witten as the possession guy, Bryant the intermediate weapon, Terrence Williams the occasional deep shot, and Beasley the underneath guy. There hasn't been that continuity and chemistry in the passing game this season.
Yeah, and look, this is on the verge of just going off a cliff right now for the Cowboys. They're sitting at 5-5 at this point, and kind of the worst time of year to be hurt because they have the short week here. So we'll see if Tyron Smith and or Sean Lee can make it back. Smith certainly more likely than Lee to make the turnaround, but they're in some trouble here. Let's go topic number two.
Number two.
The New Orleans Saints. You know, the storyline all year, we've talked about this a couple times. The defense, especially Marshawn Lattimore, the rookie corner playing at a defensive player of the year type of level. It's been defense, it's been run game, and really Drew Brees has not had to be the old Drew Brees and throw for 300-something yards and keep them in games that way. But it was different. It was different with Washington in town today. They fell behind by 15 and end up storming back. And this was a game, Lattimore got hurt. Lattimore hurt his ankle in the first half. He tried to come back in the second half, played the opening play of the second half, and aggravated it immediately. The guess is it's not going to be a long-term injury, but it will probably be on the injury report this upcoming week. But they were without him in the second half, and Kirk Cousins played really well and ended up hanging, quite a few yards and touchdowns on them in the second half. I can't do the math off the top of my head, but yeah.
Finished 322 on the game for yards. Cousin had 322 for four quarters.
They scored 31 points. I mean, it's been a very long time since the Saints gave up 30 points, and that was the only time they've really done it this year was that Patriots game in week two. They also gave up 38 to the Lions, but that was the game with all the weird, return touchdowns and all that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone was really wondering if Drew Brees could still carry them if he had to, but if you were wondering, you got your answer today.
You did. And Lattimore needs to be healthy, because if he's out for an extended period, and they have the Rams next week, a great offense, mm-hmm. a 7-3 team, playoff implications in that game, that very well might decide who winds up getting the bye week later in the year if both of these teams continue on their current paths. Yep. Lattimore is the difference maker, because with him, you have a true number one corner, and you can use everyone around him differently. You can match up one-on-one outside, which gives Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, more bodies to use inside, and that's where his scheme's complexity comes from. All of that goes out the window if you lose Lattimore. So let's hope that ankle heals quickly, because if it doesn't, the Saints defense is going to look an awful lot like the defense we've known over the last 5 or 6 years, rather than the fast, dynamic, outstanding one that we've seen this season.
Yeah. And they also had a huge stop, towards the end of a regulation here. They could have lost this game. They were defending a 3rd-and-1 about 2:38 to go, it looks like, defending a 3rd-and-1. They end up getting getting into the backfield and getting the stop on the rookie Samaje Perine. As far as Washington goes, look, it was Kirk Cousins, another big performance here. They lost Chris Thompson to a broken leg. He'll be out for the rest of the season because no one in Washington is allowed to play 16 games. And the season looks lost, but I don't see any sort of scenario where they can let Kirk Cousins get away at this point.
Well, and I think that's a different discussion for a different time, mainly because we've got all offseason to do that, don't we?
Not all offseason.
We have to do something in the offseason.
Maybe a week. First couple weeks of the offseason.
Yeah. I hate that Chris Thompson went down, because that's, again, back to the do you have to change the way you play without a guy? Yes, you do if you lose Chris Thompson. He's a big part of what they've done. Their wide receivers have not progressed the way they hoped, Josh Doctson and especially Terrell Pryor, and they don't have any other guys to go with on the perimeter. And Thompson was the only thing keeping them afloat because of that. The screen game and the stuff he could do splitting out into empty formations. Well, now someone's got to play. Someone has to play better than they have been at wide receiver, and there's no indication that that's going to happen. That's a huge loss for them, and it's unfortunate for Chris Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, they did get Crowder back. Doctson is making some more plays of this one. They got Niles Paul back, too, so they actually had two tight ends for the first time in a while, which was a nice thing for Jay Gruden. He could actually use those packages.
Number three.
Is the best team in the NFC? Is it the is it the Eagles? Is it the Saints? Or is it the Minnesota Vikings? This was the big matchup. This was the offense versus the defense, and the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. And the immovable object won in this one. The Vikings were after an opening drive touchdown by the Rams. LA really didn't do anything. They really only had one other drive of note that ended with a Cooper Kupp fumble on the 1 yard line. But look, Mike Zimmer's unit won this one.
He did. That unit's been together a long time. And here's the Rams are playing really well, but here's the difference. That Mike Zimmer and his staff have been together for 4 years. They've had the same players on that defense for 4 years. And you see it. Those guys, everybody plays faster by the week. And when guys are playing faster, that's indicative of who guys being comfortable. You see it most with those safeties. Harrison Smith, Andrew Sandahill, that's as good of a safety tandem as you're going to get. And they use those guys very aggressively. aggressive safeties within the context of the scheme, and it's a scheme that everybody, all these, there's seven or eight former first-round picks in that scheme, they're all playing it together, playing it really well, versus the Rams, who are having a nice season, but they're brand new. It's a new staff, new head coach, first-time offensive coordinator, young QB, new guys all playing together, experience versus inexperience. The experience was at home today, and the experience won.
Your guy, Adam Thielen, made your midseason All-Pro team. I mean, he's been fantastic today.
Yeah, he's been better in the second half of the season. He was fantastic a week ago. And why Adam Thielen is so valuable, Minnesota's offense is very meticulously designed through the air. We're wondering, how is Case Keenum doing what he's doing? He's not just going out there and lighting the world on fire all of a sudden. He's still Case Keenum. But they have such a well-designed offense, and there's such precision to the way their routes are drawn up and the way they release receivers off the line of scrimmage and get their routes intertwined. All these routes relate to each other in Minnesota, and for those routes, when they're combination routes like that, the precision of the route running becomes important, because the combination is dependent on precise execution. Well, that's what Adam Thielen gives you. Stephon Diggs gives it as well. Thielen, mm-hmm. I mean, the more I watch him, the more trouble I have figuring out who's a better route runner besides him. Antonio Brown, probably because of his physical gifts, but from a technical skill standpoint, I don't know who's better than Thielen at running routes, and that's a big reason Minnesota's offense works.
Yeah, and look, you know, Jay Glazer had reported earlier this week that the Vikings were very close to making the switch to Teddy Bridgewater this week. And again, we're going to say for the second straight week, Keenum was too good. I mean, Keenum was too good to take out of the lineup and risk what they have going right now. I mean, it almost doesn't matter who's under center with how good the defense is playing, but boy, to make a change at this point. I know they love Bridgewater, and I'm almost sure Bridgewater will be the starter in week one of next season. But, man, I mean, it's not even close to a meltdown at this point for Keenum.
No,
And
I don't think there's a lot of difference between Bridgewater and Keenum. I know Bridgewater's the younger guy, and he's talented, and people like that. His arm is nothing great. He has a below-average NFL arm, in fact, just like Keenum does. And Bridgewater is bigger, but he doesn't play big. We talked about Carson Wentz and how hard he is to deal with. That's not the style of play. He's not Cam Newton or something. He very much has to have the scheme help him out, just like the scheme has to help Case Keenum. So then it becomes a question of who do we think is going to run the scheme better? And Keenum's been in the system all year. He's been familiar with Pat Shurmur. Remember, Bridgewater, when he went down, he was playing for Norv Turner, very different offensive coordinator, very different scheme. So Bridgewater, you're plugging in an inexperienced guy whose skill set, even though no one's going to agree with this or believe me, his skill set's very similar to Case Keenum's as it is. I don't think Bridgewater's the better option head-to-head anyway.
Yeah, well, we'll find out in 2018, because I don't think it's I don't think the switch is coming. I just don't even think they have a choice at this point. But then again, I was shocked that they were discussing it this past week. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. And remember, the last time we saw Denver 2015, right? That's the last time we saw a team that had legitimate Super Bowl aspirations and questions at quarterback, and do we play this guy or do we play that guy? And those questions lasted well into late December, and it wound up working out for them. You have to have good coaching to do that, to deal with that kind of thing. And I think Mike Zimmer is the right temperament to deal with that. It's a good problem to have, too. Let's not forget that. There are worse problems than being 8-2 and trying to figure out who you believe can get you there further as your quarterback goes along.
Number four.
Ben McAdoo. I don't know. We do the family pick'em pool and all that, and I kept on looking at the Chiefs spread, and I was like, man, Chiefs are only giving 10 points in this game. I thought the Chiefs might be giving 3 touchdowns in East Rutherford. I didn't actually think that would be the number, but I was trying to think of a number where I would think the Giants would cover, and I thought it was going to have to be like 20. Giants beat the Chiefs. I'm still just stunned by this result.
They're a professional football team, and this is why the difference.
I know.
Well, what do you know? Like, you're gonna
no,
gonna
we
scold
we
me
talk.
For not
you know,
the,
I know. I get carried away, and it bothers me when other people get carried away, and they start treating this like it's Alabama Mercer or something like that. Alabama played Mercer on Saturday, by the way. Mercer did not beat them.
But that's one of the things I like about the pros. You can't do that in the NFL. We just saw proof of that today, and the Giants have talent. It's a good defensive roster. It hasn't played well. It did today. They've got Eli Manning at quarterback. They're professional athletes. You don't become this far in your career, any of these guys, if you have a quitting mentality, and it's good to see that. It's good to get the reminder every once in a while that this is why NFL teams deserve to be respected, because there are 32 good ones in the NFL.
Yeah. And look, they were without Eli Apple in this, and certainly best wishes to Annie Apple, his mother, who had brain surgery. That's why Eli was out in this one. Janoris Jenkins, you know, he was sort of one of the guys people were circling and saying, oh, the effort isn't there. I thought he was great in this game. He gave up one big catch that was really just a great play by Tyreek Hill. And other than that, he was making plays. He had an interception that almost sealed it in regulation. This ended up going to overtime. Looked like he was headed towards a tie when Eli Manning, Roger Lewis just made a highlight reel catch, being interfered with, falling to the ground. As he hit the ground, sort of bounced back up and made the catch, and that set up the winning points. And that was a 4th and 6 from sort of the edge of field goal range. So that's how this one ended. If you want to read a little bit more about Ben McAdoo, our Connor Orr of the MMQB, our newish guy, he's not that new anymore, but he did a great piece on McAdoo.
Yeah,
he knows McAdoo well. He used to cover the Giants, and he killed it. It was a great piece on just how just kind of weird McAdoo is. I mean, it's endearing to a lot of people.
And, and his background and how he became the coach he is, and you come away respecting Ben McAdoo from it.
Yeah,
and it's not conjecture or Connor's opinion. Connor just tells you it's told through other people, mostly people mm-hmm. in Green Bay. It's really I glanced at it as I was walking from point A to point B on a film study break. I think I went to the restroom, to be honest with you. Reading my phone on the way back, I put the film on pause and just finished reading the whole article for the next 10 minutes. It was that good. That came out on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, Gary, I want to give credit to these Giants. I'll watch the film and get more information about it, but these Giant linebackers, I watched that 49ers-Giants film the other night,
mm-hmm.
and the Giants are depleted at linebacker. And
yeah.
Kyle Shanahan smartly noticed that, and he put Kyle Juszczyk, their fullback, on the field. I think he played like 45 snaps, which is a lot for a fullback. And they said, we're going to make you play with your linebackers. And the Giants, that's how they got beat by the 49ers on the road. Well, they're still thin at linebacker. Calvin Shepard didn't have to play in this game. He'd been signed off the street. But B.J. Goodson's still out. It's Calvin Munson in there with Jonathan Casillas. These are not NFL household names. And they're facing a Chiefs team that does a lot with misdirection, that stretches you in the middle of the field, that gives you a lot to read, a lot of disguise, a lot of deception. And if ever there was a week for a backup linebacker to show his backupness, so to speak, this mm-hmm. would have been it. And here the Giants are with these guys holding the Chiefs to, what, 9 points.
That's a
remarkable performance by that defense, and Steve Spagnuolo playing with those guys.
And we got to talk about the Chiefs real quick. I mean, they have two touchdowns in the last two games, and one of those two touchdowns was that Tyreek Hill catch and run Hail Mary at the end of the first half in Dallas. I don't know, Andy, what's going on? I mean, they were 5-0, and I think everyone's sort of getting a little too excited about this team, but sheesh, it hasn't gone well the last two games.
No, and what changed was a few weeks ago when they played Pittsburgh. And I'm not a big blueprint guy, because all the time a team that does well and then they lose, people say, well, there's the blueprint. Mm-hmm. That's how you do it. And it's as if coaches never thought of any other scheme. We didn't know we could play zone against the Chiefs. That's a good idea. There's the blueprint. And it's usually bull crap. But in this case, there's a little bit of a blueprint, because when the Steelers sat back and just stayed in their zones against Kansas City, you do two things when you do that against an offense that tries to beat you with misdirection and scheme. For one is you have all the eyes on the ball and the misdirection, mm-hmm. so it's just easier to control. But for two, if you're not matching up, then the misdirection's in less control. Because if you're a misdirection offense and one guy goes this way, the other goes that way, well, if it's man coverage and you're sending defenders this way and that way and you're controlling that and you know where those guys are going to be defensively, that's a huge advantage. You lose that element when it's zone coverage. The Giants are a big zone-based team, and they play a lot of two-deep zone. They play cover four with safeties back, corners back. Everybody's got a fourth of the field. It's a really good style of football to control some of the misdirection stuff. You're not as vulnerable to it. And these teams that are handling Kansas City, Dallas played a ton of zone against Kansas City. That's what the formula has been. It's zone coverage right now. And Andy Reid, he knows how to beat zone coverage. There are zone beating concepts out there. He's got to ask his quarterback to do it, though, and that's what's a little bit different. Alex Smith, everybody's MVP in the first half. It's a different game for him now, and he's going to have to make more plays. The system can't help him as much until they start beating zone. You beat zone by the quarterback making throws to route designs downfield.
Yep. Well, Chiefs have dropped 4 of 5 here, and they'll make the playoffs because the AFC is really bad this year, but they got some. They have some things to address over the next month.
Number five,
topic number five, Andy. This was. Are you a Seinfeld fan?
I am. Every episode, I've seen them all. Not lately, but I saw them growing up.
This was a ride on the Peterman reality bus tour. This did not go well for Nathan Peterman in L.A. for his first game. His first start. 5 interceptions in the first half. This immediately got ugly, and it started okay, and the first interception, the pick six was, he dumped it off to his fullback, who, Patrick DeMarco bats the thing up in the air instead of catching it, and it turns into 6 points for the Chargers. But after that, I mean, it went downhill immediately.
So a few things. One, first of all, we have to wait and see the interceptions. Like, we've seen them on TV, we've seen how they've gone, but we have to see them on the film. And I know that people probably hate it when I say that, but that's true, because a lot of times when you get to these games where there's 5 interceptions, usually one or two of them are circumstantial. Like you said, the ball gets bad in the air or something like that. You have to see what the decision-making behind them is. You also have to see if there could have been more interceptions. Sometimes there's bad decisions that go unpunished. So let's pump the brakes on the Peterman there in that regard. The other thing I want to say, you mentioned your Seinfeld thing. I read your 10 things column on the Buffalo breakdown and what they're doing at QB. And if our listeners don't read Gary Gramling's 10 things I think on the weekends, you're missing out, because it is such a perfect blend of football talk, humor, topical information, and you're probably our best writer at MMQB, Gary. And I just wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed reading the Bills breakdown. You had like 8 things as your first item because you talked Buffalo. That's what you do when you get onto Buffalo. But you went through that quarterback situation pretty well. And my question for you is, what do you do now if you're Sean McDermott? What do you go back to Tyrod or not?
I think, I don't know. I'm still surprised he went away from Tyrod, just because it was a bold move, and I don't think
you
put Peterman back
in. But you supported it,
didn't
you? I got the sense reading your article, I felt like you understood it or were not in favor,
I definitely understood it. I had no problem with the actual move. That they're in sort of my overall point was, look, the Bills have gotten so many bounces. This is not a 5-4 team. This is a team that realizes it is probably a 3-6 or 2-7 caliber team coming into this week, and we're looking at this as saying we can't beat NFL teams with the way we play right now. We need something different, and the something was ended up being the quarterback. You can read the whole article is still up there.
Yes, that's right. Send them there. Get the traffic still.
Yeah.
It's still topical. It's still relevant, especially now with what happened on Sunday.
I was gonna say it's. I mean, it's like the one thing that could have gone just completely definitively wrong for them in this game was you sort of ruin your rookie quarterback. You know, you basically scar him for life at this point. And that's kind of what you have. I mean, he threw five interceptions in the first half, and they really had to pull him, because then you start getting into the territory of like, is he going to throw eight? Is he going to set the all time record in this game? And you know, that's tough to get over. You know, when you're making your first NFL start here. So, I mean, I don't know. I thought this team was done coming to this game. I know they are in the playoff race. I really thought their odds were very long, considering the roster they have and what they're going to be moving forward. And you know, the conclusion of my article was basically, you know, is it the right choice? Well, there kind of wasn't a right choice. It's a team with two guys who are the wrong option.
Yeah, yeah. Their run defense hasn't been very good lately, and that's an issue. And I don't know if that gets corrected, because I'm not huge on their linebackers anyway. I don't think Preston Brown is a difference maker. Ramon Humber's a journeyman. Those are the guys they're playing with. You know, if a quarterback's going to get scarred from five interceptions, and he was probably going to get scarred anyway, too. I mean, Troy Aikman had a bad rookie year, and you know, Troy Aikman did fine. It's so, and the Manning, Eli, Peyton, and Peyton especially, they ton of interceptions early in their careers. So I don't know if I worry as much about scarring a guy, but what you do worry about is keeping the locker room. You know, you're 5-5. Yeah. You're in the middle of the playoff race in the AFC. And you're a new regime, and the players know who should be playing and not playing. And I bet you a few of them weren't thrilled that Tyrod got benched anyway. I supported them. I was support moving him out of the lineup. But what do you do now when the backup's that bad? You run the risk of losing the locker room. I think that's what McDermott has to consider, is he truly has to play the best guy, which most coaches, that's what you have to do. I mean, McDermott is trying to win these games. Let's not forget that. But he's in rocking a hard place here, because he doesn't have a best guy right now.
Yeah, I don't know. When I look back at the season, it's just like that 5-2 start's the worst thing that could happen to this team, because it's not even close to that. This is still, and now I've been arguing this all season.
0-7 is the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, if you're winless, if you're going to like the comically bad, if they were 1-6 or 2-7 coming into this week, that's probably what they are as far as the quality of the roster. And you know, no one really care. I mean, you get to have a little more leeway. You know, the one thing I did learn today was I did hear from a lot of people in Western New York saying, you know, this was not an unpopular move in Buffalo. This was something that the fan base has been clamoring for, and a lot of the local guys who are with the team on a regular basis have been saying was kind of inevitable at this point. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and the other thing about losing the locker room is, you know, again, no offense, but I mean, these guys are expendable for the most part. I mean, there are not a whole lot of guys who you can say, you know, we can't lose this guy, or we can't move this guy in the offseason.
Sure.
I mean, they have a bunch of young guys that they'll build around, and this was a total teardown, and this was supposed to be a complete rebuilding year, not a playoff contention year, and I think you're going to see this team finish at 7-9 or 6-10 anyway, so.
Those expendable guys, they got friends in the NFL, they all share agents, word gets around too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, but I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Let's keep in mind, everybody in the AFC that we're about to talk about, we're going to get to, I think it's, is it even next on the list, Bengals and Broncos? These are all still teams in playoff contention. That AFC has
they
a very soft bottom of the standings, and 5-5 right now, you're in a driver's seat. So these are real decisions they have to make. And I know we're talking rebuild, and it's a long project. They still want to make the playoffs this year, and they're in position to do that. They can win their next few games.
Chargers staying in position, by the way.
Yep.
Four and six are there. I pick the Chargers every year for the playoffs, and maybe this is the year.
Do you think they would go for a road game? Like, do you think if they're the let's say they could win the AFC West in week 17, do they try to do that, or do they want to go play on the road? It's kind of cheeky, but it's not completely cheeky.
I mean, they're two out of You know, they're two out of the AFC West lead here, and yeah, no, but that's we'll talk about when we get to the Ravens. We'll talk about it because I think the Ravens are winning that sixth seed in the AFC, but we'll get to it in a minute.
Larry Bird once said that Michael Jordan was God, just disguised in a basketball jersey. MJ was considered not only the best athlete, but had the perfect image. But then a book came out, The Jordan Rules, and the public and media couldn't believe it. Jordan was human. Nearly 3 years later, he retired.
Everybody, Dwayne Johnson here to tell you about a new documentary podcast series titled What Really Happened, narrated by award-winning documentary filmmaker Andrew Jenks in coordination with our company, 7 Bucks Productions. This series will look deep into the unknown sides of historic news stories and then ask, what really happened?
Why did he leave the game in his prime? Was it a secret suspension? Did he really want to play minor league baseball? Could any of the conspiracy theories be true? What really happened?
Really, there are no guarantees in the AFC this year, just like there are no guarantees in life. They say there's no sure thing. Well, I'm here to tell you that there might just be one exception. In 1924, Husky started making things for people who make things, and they did it with common sense. That meant adding function, never frills, and making tools that stood the test of time. 93 years later, Husky is still making quality, crafted, durable tools, and Husky stands by their hand tools for life, so they give their hand tools a lifetime warranty. Like the Husky Ratchet, with a 100-position ratcheting design and a 10% longer handle than standard ratchets to do what other ratchets can't, or the virtually unbreakable Husky flashlight with the ability to withstand a 30-foot drop and work in up to 1 meter of water submersion, both guaranteed for a lifetime, but built so you won't need it. Now that's a pretty sure thing, and to Husky, that's common sense. Husky, common sense tools since 1924, with hand tools guaranteed for a lifetime, found only at the Home Depot.
Number six.
Okay, Andy, topic number six. This is the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Super Bowl bound Jacksonville Jaguars going into Cleveland and winning.
Maybe you're editing my column. I fear what kind of headline you're going to put on that.
I think I just came up with the headline. But let's just get to the question. They win ugly. They don't have very good quarterback play. Everyone knows what they're going to do offensively, but is the defense mm-hmm. dominant enough to carry them deep into January?
I would have said no a month ago, but watching their film in that Chargers game a week ago and then watching this game today, they remind me a lot of the 2013 Seattle Seahawks, who had a better offense. And I mean, they had Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson's mm-hmm. a better QB at that stage of his career even than Blake Bortles is now. So I get that. But let's just talk that defense. That is an incredibly talented defense, and they're playing up to it. I didn't know if they would. A lot of times you sign free agents, you draft these guys, and they just don't mesh. They've meshed there. And that secondary is dynamic. What really makes me excited about them is when you put on the film, and why I think they're similar to the 2013 Seahawks, they do a lot of little nuanced things out of cover three. It's not just they line up and here's cover three, here's the zone, that's how we play. They understand route combinations. They have great vision. They're linebackers, they're safeties. Everybody sees things the same way. They tweak stuff just enough to make their cover three malleable to react to what you do offensively. And that's really hard to play against. And one of the reasons they're able to do that is they're fast. Everybody can run. And that's what Seattle's always been special about. Coaches will tell you, and Seattle's no longer a cover three defense. That's why we're mm-hmm. saying the 2013 Seahawks. But back then, coaches would say, boy, you just sat and waited and hoped you could get them in something other than that cover three, because then that's when you felt like you had your shot. Okay, we can go get some yards now. Here's our best window. That's a little bit like what it is with Jacksonville. They really dictate and dominate the game when they're in their foundational cover three. And oh, by the way, they can rush the passer, and that makes any zone-based defense better.
Yeah, I mean, is there any reason to think this defense is going to slow up as the year goes on? It seems like they're only going to get better at this point.
Yeah, and they have only been getting better. They're only playing faster. They're young. Miles Jack's starting to look good. Telvin Smith, I think, looks good all the time in the right settings. When you give him space, when he's clean, when you keep bodies off of him. Marcell Dareus has been a boost for their run defense in that second string role. Yannick Ngakoue is their best pass rusher. And I know Calais Campbell's dominant. Ngakoue is the guy that's going to be scaring defensive or offensive coordinators as the season goes along. He's their only true edge bender. They didn't have an edge bender before, and they were still getting to the QB. They've got one now. He is long. He's quick. He's their second-year defensive end, a third-round pick last season. I don't see them being anything but better come December.
So offensively, I mean, you know, the Browns were obviously expecting run in this one, and that's what they got. Leonard Fournette ends up carrying 28 times. What's the deal with Bortles? Can they trust Bortles in any sort of like third and medium and long situations?
Nope. Or they don't. They can't. They don't, and you have to just play around Bortles, and then that's a separate discussion. Can Bortles be saved? What do you do with him? He needs a very specific type of offense that they really don't have the guys to run, especially with Allen Robinson out. Bortles is methodical, and if you're methodical, you have a slow windup, you don't process information super speedily, you need help with play action. All of that speaks to a downfield offense. Well, their wide receivers are Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns when he's healthy, is Dede Westbrook's guy. I saw him for the first time today. He looks like he's a slight frame, quick type of receiver as well. Those are spread passing offensive receivers. And they do what they can with them, and they get some good third down crossing routes with Lee at times, but those are remote plays. They're all in isolation. There's not a down-to-down rhythm. Their offensive weapons don't match each other, and they're going to change a quarterback after this season anyway, so they'll have a chance to correct it. But for now, they got to just play around that, and it becomes a function of Leonard Fournette, Chris Ivory, and TJ Yeldon, and having those guys fresh down the stretch and understanding that a couple of three-yard gains, those are successful offensive snaps for you. Their defense wins this stuff by scoring and getting huge turnovers at swing field position. It's a playmaking defense. It's not the 2000 Ravens where they just line up and stop you and you can't move the ball. This is a playmaking defense, and that's how it has to be.
Andy, I want you to come into the hot take zone with me for two quick questions. And don't give me a deep explanation, because we'll talk about this stuff as the year goes on. My first question is, do you think the Browns win a game this year?
I always say yes to something like that. Don't ask me which one, but I always say yes.
Yep. And I mentioned this in my column this morning. Tyrod Taylor, Jacksonville Jaguars next year, considering their cap situation, they'll be priced out of the big guys. They're not going to be drafting high. I'm saying Tyrod in Jacksonville next season.
I read that when I wrote your column this morning, and I kind of liked it when I read it. My first instinct is to say, well, they need a veteran QB that will just run the system. And the question is, do we think that is what Taylor is? And maybe he is, because they would have pretty defined reads for him in that offense. And when you define the read, you got to really define it. But when you do, Taylor can be pretty good. I kind of like the idea. I'm not all against it. I'm all right with it. I don't think Tom Coughlin would go for that, though. I don't think Tyrod's a Tom Coughlin style QB. But I thought it was a smart point you made there this morning in that column.
Well, we'll have months to talk about it.
Number seven.
Bengals and Broncos. This was a game that the Broncos pretty much won every statistical category except for final score.
And I watched every snap of this, and I never felt... it didn't feel that way. It felt like the flow of the game. It felt like the Bengals played fine. The Bengals have no running game at all. So it's hard to evaluate them, because they're going to lose out statistically. They can't. I mean, they haven't stayed on the field the last few weeks. They had like 18 plays, I think, in the first half of this game. They had 51 plays the week before. The week before that, they ran a total of 38 plays, which is absurd. They just cannot sustain offense. They have zero running game. They probably need to be making some changes. Maybe coaching staff changes. They have such a unique coaching staff, and you wonder if that thing has run its course a little bit. So I don't know, but I thought they played well today. Andy Dalton was fine. I didn't feel like Denver was ever really in control of the game. I haven't even looked at the numbers. How lopsided were they?
341 to 190 in total yards here. The one thing that stood out to it, especially in the fourth quarter, when the Bengals needed to move the chains, they moved the chains. I think they had like four consecutive third down conversions at one point, which included that AJ Green touchdown that stretched the lead to 20-10 with a little less than 9 minutes to go. So, yeah, I mean, I did not watch this game as closely as you did. I was surprised to see the final numbers, and I don't know, the Broncos, man, it's I don't know. I don't know what you do with this team at this point.
That's been a really disappointing team. Cincinnati's got those young tackles, and Von Miller didn't do a whole lot in this game either. So yeah. that's a positive. 4-6, the Bengals are in the playoff hunt, and they've got four of their next six, which would be four of their last six games at home as well. It was funny watching the game. It was Gumbel and Trent Green doing the game. I think they do an excellent job, the CBS crew. And they started off, they said they wanted to sell the game. They know it's hard because these are both 3-6 teams. They said, but we got something for you that'll tell you how important the game actually is. And the big reveal a few snaps later was that no team has gone 3-7 and made the playoffs or something like that. I mean, it was something flimsy. And so they said, this is a must win because if you go 3-7, you're not making the playoffs. And then what happened was as the day went along, the scores started trickling in. Buffalo face planted. And they realized, holy cow, 4-6, you're going to be pretty much a game out of the serious wild card contention. So all of a sudden, then the narrative changed. And hey, folks, you're watching a huge game because there are major wild card implications on the line here. So this became a fun game because of the way they build it at CBS. I guess that's good television.
Good on them. Those are good folks over at CBS. I mean, look, the way it's shaking out right now, you got the Bills and Ravens at 5-5 are tied for that sixth seed, and then it's a whole bunch of teams at 4-6. I mean, the Jets and the Dolphins are both 4-6. The Bengals are 4-6. The Texans are 4-6, and the Chargers and the Raiders. So lots of teams.
And what's going to happen
quote,
is somebody
unquote,
from that
competing.
Right, and someone from that group's going to finish 5-11, maybe 4-12, and we're going to forget we ever thought about them in the playoff talk. And then someone else is going to finish 9-7 and come in red hot, and we're going to forget we ever talked about them as an average team. This stuff will sort itself out. I mean, we get so caught up now that everyone's in contention. Of course they are, because they've all played only 10 games.
Well, I think 9 is going to be the number to get that 6-seed 9-7 record, and I think that's going to be the Baltimore Ravens.
Number 8.
And that is topic number 8. The Ravens go into Lambeau, and look, they won a very Ravens game. This was a shutout of the Packers, 23-0. You know, it looked like a week ago the Packers might have figured out how to get this thing going with Brett Hundley and maybe lean on the ground game and the two backs a little bit more, and you know, that didn't really get going. No Ty Montgomery, no Aaron Jones, by the way, it was Jamal Williams in the backfield for the Packers. Run game didn't get going, and look, Hundley was bad again. Ends up throwing three interceptions, took a bunch of sacks, and this one got away quick.
Well, they fell behind. He had two interceptions in the first two series of the games, and that's a problem. And Baltimore, their run defense was bad early in the season, which was mind-boggling. Explain that to me. And then Brandon Williams, their defensive tackle, he was out of the lineup. He came back in. It took a week or two. Mm-hmm. But you get the sense, when you put on the film, you get the sense, hey, they're looking like the Ravens again. They're playing run defense. Brandon Williams is a big difference maker in every sense of the game. First, second, third down. And this is their third shutout of the season now in Baltimore. I don't know if any team's ever done four. We'd have to have someone can tweet us at that and let us know. I don't think there's been four, but this is a really good Ravens defense.
Yeah, and I was kind of waiting for that. And I remember when Williams first came back was that Vikings game, and they still ended up getting gashed. And it was kind of like, oh, Okay. Well, maybe it wasn't just the absence of Brandon Williams, but it does look like they're turning around, and they certainly have it's not only a talented defensive backfield. It's lots of veteran guys. It's a very savvy backfield that they have there. I think they're going to be good enough. They have a soft schedule coming down the stretch here, and I think they get their 9 wins, and they are going to, I guess it might be Kansas City at this point. No, it would be Jacksonville at this point.
It's a little early to project the exact games, isn't it? You made us do that, didn't we? Have to do that for our mid-season picks or something at MMQB?
I wouldn't say I made us do I didn't
well,
make
you sent
us
the
do
email.
That thing was a – I did send the email. It was a pain in the butt to pull that whole thing together. It ruined my entire week that week, pulling all those stupid graphics together, me and Bette Marson. But, man.
You made us pick winners and playoff games, didn't you? Yeah, you
yes.
did. I remember that. I have to do
yep.
that for the magazine every year, and I hate it. It's not just picking the standings, which is impossible to begin with, and that's what you get labeled as. But then you have to make up these games and then say the score. Did we do scores? I don't think we did scores.
We didn't do scores. That is
we
correct.
We didn't.
So just
Dorson,
playoff teams and winners.
Yeah, at the magazine, Adam Dorson said we got to do scores as well. We've always done scores. So they wanted me to predict the games. This is in August. They wanted me to predict the games, predict standings, and then predict the scores of these make-believe games based off my make-believe standings. And I told him, if you're making me do scores, I'm going to embarrass you guys. I'm going to make up. I'm going to come up with like scores that are, how could they happen? Like 12-4 is going to be the score of some game that I pick. And then the next game, the same team that scored 12 the first week, they're going to score 57 the next week. I'm going to make it look bad if you do that. It worked. They didn't call the bluff. I didn't have to do scores for the magazine, and
there
we don't have to do scores at MMQB, and all these predictions and makeup things are just ridiculous. And now you're telling us who Jacksonville and Baltimore in the first round of the playoffs?
Yes. I am saying if you are a Ravens fan, book your travel to Jacksonville for the first week of the playoffs. Just do it now. And don't come complaining to me when they miss the playoffs. But yeah, I think the Ravens have the clear inside edge, although I will continue to say the Chargers will make the playoffs until they are mathematically eliminated.
All right. And I'll just wait till someone does make the playoffs, and then we'll talk about it.
Wait till the playoffs, and then, yeah, that's probably a much better idea.
Number 9.
Andy, it is time for topic 9. This is the lightning round, and this is a very special lightning round. Do you know why?
I don't. I'm afraid to hear why.
No, it's good. And actually, I'm making this up, but I'm just going to assume this is factually true. This is the first time the Patriots are ever appearing in our lightning round.
Ah, yeah.
Because their Patriots game is always you know, one of the marquee games. Not that these are non-marquee games, but I don't know. But they're not really marquee games.
We have to fit something in somewhere. And anyone who listens to this show knows that the lightning round games usually get featured more because we get off track and we talk way too
say,
long
we,
about them. And
we finally have time to talk about the
round.
Patriots this week.
Yeah.
All right. Patriots in Mexico City. They beat the Raiders. This game was not competitive. 33-8 was the final. Boy, this Raiders team with the drops, these receivers with the drops, it's not good. And the Patriots are clicking fully on offense. I don't know. I mean, they're just going back to the Super Bowl at this point. I don't see who's going to derail that at this point.
Sticking with predictions, I like that. Yeah, I think the talk is on the Raiders' side of things, and there's nothing you can do about drop passes if you're a coaching staff. Now, Todd Downing, their offensive coordinator, I thought he's done a better job lately of getting his receivers opportunities, mainly putting Amari Cooper in the slot. That's been the most obvious example, but they've done other things as well. Unbalancing the formation, getting mismatches by design for the wide receivers. That's good coaching. All of it's irrelevant if the guy doesn't catch the ball.
Yeah, and on the defensive side, it was actually so Obi Bell and Fanwu made his the rookie made his first start. They moved him to cornerback, and he ended up starting in this one. And I was excited to see that because he is a local hero, a University of Connecticut fella. It didn't go so well, and it looked like you know, you can't say for sure right now, but it looked like he blew a coverage pretty badly on the Brandon Cooks 64-yard touchdown. But Melvin Fonwu, he's interesting. He's a sort of size, speed, athleticism guy, and we'll see if they can get something out of him here. Because that defensive backfield has not been very good.
No, it has not.
Lions and Bears. This was, all these games in Soldier Field end up being difficult for the visiting team. I mean, it's a tough place to play, and that was the case today. The Bears actually jumped out on top. Lions came back, looked like they were in control, and this was actually, this, you know, it was kind of a nice day for Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, we've said all year he doesn't have the weapons, but he made a couple plays late. Their young guy Tarik Cohen made a play on a nice little touchdown run, getting to the pylon to tie this one late, and ultimately it turned on Matt Prater hitting a 50-yarder, and then Connor Barth missing a 46-yarder, and the Lions get out of there with a win.
And I think one reason it's teams don't play as well at Soldier Field, the grass is really slow there. It's long, soft grass. It's a different playing surface than teams are used to, and that can neutralize your speed at times, and speed's a difference maker for a lot of teams.
You ever watch King of the Hill?
I did years ago. I might get a reference. I don't know. What do you have?
It's an obscure reference. The Wizard of Sod, the guy who does the high school field there.
Nope, don't get it. Sorry.
Disappointing.
Not a bad show.
Well, that's what I think of whenever we talk about the slow Soldier Field track. Bucks and Dolphins, Ryan Fitzpatrick, undefeated. So we definitely have a quarterback controversy in Tampa now. But this was, I don't know, Jay Cutler was bad in this one again. And he ended up sitting, and he was, there was a concussion protocol stuff with him. I don't know if he gets back on the field when he's done here. Threw three more interceptions today. Matt Moore came in and brought him back, and maybe that's just the formula. Maybe they just have to start Cutler and then bring Matt Moore in the late second quarter, and that's how they'll do it there. But Bucks get another win, so Bucks sort of saving some face here, and I like Dirk Cutter, so I hope Dirk Cutter gets to stay on there.
Yeah, I like Dirk Cutter too. He's an Idaho guy. We meet up in the mountains every year when we can. Gase in that offense in Miami. I don't mean to say Gase because he's not the one struggling. His players are, but you know he's responsible for his players. He'll tell you that. That offense and their underachievement to me is one of the most shocking storylines of this season.
I wonder about that offensive line and all. Maybe it's all the stuff with Chris Forrester. There was a time last year when it was kind of like, oh, this line is, they got a lot of early draft picks, and it was kind of like, all right, this is starting to come together here. You're seeing why they took all these guys so high, and it's getting worse every week.
You wonder if they might want to. I would consider moving Tunsil back to left guard. He has not been very good at left tackle. He should be. He's super talented. And this is totally my guess and conjecture, but when Gase is saying we've got our best players not playing well, which he said a few weeks ago, and they're the guys that aren't looking prepared, I bet you Tunzel's one of those guys. I don't know that, so don't think that's inside info or anything, but Tunzel's had a disappointing year, and as a left guard, he was so athletic and dynamic, and they could do a lot. They like him at left tackle because they run so many wide receiver screens. You want to have an athlete that can get out on the perimeter to block those. The other team that does wide receiver screens is the Redskins with Trent Williams. So there, it makes sense to have Tunzel there, but it just has not worked out. Tunzel, Landry, Ajayi, those are the three guys that have looked very disappointing this season. They got rid of one of them. I think they're going to get rid of the middle one there, Landry, eventually, and I think they might want to consider making a change with where they play the first guy, Tunzel.
Yeah. Last game here, this was the Cardinals and Texans, not flexed to primetime here for Tom Savage versus Blaine Gabbert. Texans get the win. This was, it was two teams that are, sort of suffering through injury plagued and
undefeated season. Yeah, it's been a tough year for both teams.
And it was a little bit fitting that between these two games, it's sort of the deciding game play that sealed it, I should say. The rookie running back, Deontay Foreman, who has flashed and looked really good at times for the Texans this year. His 34-yard touchdown run sealed it, and he ruptured his Achilles as he went into the end zone. So that was
bad.
That was a, I don't know, that was That was appropriate of him, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't have much to say on that. I'll watch this one later. I heard Bruce Arians was pretty upset with himself for a fourth down decision that he made, and he put the loss on himself. A tough year for these teams.
Yeah, yeah, they had a fourth down. I mean, look, they went three tight ends, and they gave it to Adrian Peterson, and he got stuffed. So that's just the way it goes.
Number 10.
Weekly awards. Offense Player of the Week. Who do you have?
Oh, boy. What, can you go first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can go first. I will give mine to Drew Brees. They were down 15. He had to be nearly perfect in those final two drives, and he was. And they got the two-pointer as well with Kamara. And this was Drew Brees kind of reminding the world that he is Drew Brees indeed.
And see, I like to kind of do obscure guys on games that I watched extra closely, because anyone can just say Drew Brees. That's in my opinion, that's lazy broadcasting.
I said Drew Brees.
Oh, so... sorry. Jason Kelce, how about that for Philadelphia? He's had a really nice season. He did not play well the last 2 years. Teams were putting a nose tackle right over him. He's not particularly strong. He struggled in a phone booth. He's overcome that a little bit. You can't just be stronger all of a sudden. It'd be nice if we all could. You got to play around that. But what he does well, and what Doug Peterson's been able to find ways to do, is he's great in space. And when he gets out in front, he's as good as anyone in the NFL. He had some great blocks tonight. I think it was on Anthony Hitchens that he had the block on the touchdown, the 30-yard touchdown run. Anyway, I'm going to go Jason Kelce having a really nice season at center for the Eagles.
All right. Defensive Player of the Week. I'm going to go Harrison Smith. A bit of a group effort for the Vikings here, obviously, as it always is. But Smith was around the ball in a couple of big breakups here. But they also look. The Rams have gotten those big designer shot plays, and they didn't get one. They had a couple of their long gain was 23 yards in this game. They had two of those, but that was it. They didn't get anything big, and obviously overall they were unable to do a whole lot. So Harrison Smith,
really surprising that the Rams didn't get any explosive plays, because they knew what Minnesota would be in coverage wise. Minnesota, they do you know their coverages. Now they're going to rotate it to the coverage a little differently, and that's where they're complicated. But once the play settles in, you know what coverage they'll be in, and that's usually where the Rams are real explosive. Not in this game, though. Harrison Smith played very well. I'll go with, for my defensive player of the week, I'm going to go Miles Jack on Jacksonville. He's starting to show up on film. I'm starting to see what other people saw in him.
All right. That's a good one. Special teams player of the week. I'm sure that'll be just as good. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, because I want to claim who's the guy that was kicking the field goals, or they didn't let him kick field goals, but he was kicking the ball off.
Yeah, Kamu Grugier-Hill.
That's who I dibs. I actually watched the kickoffs this tonight because I was entertained by that.
He got a touchback on one of those.
Yeah, he did, and he had another one that reached the goal line. What's his name one more time?
Kamu Grugier-Hill.
He definitely hasn't played much on defense. If he'd been on defense, I would have known the name at least a little bit. Because if I see a guy I don't know on film, I always look him up. It's ridiculous, but I do that.
Yeah.
So
now,
he must
he's
not
a special
play
teams,
anything.
He's a special teams guy. The thing I most remember him for this year was he's one of the guys who carried Jake Elliott off the field after that 61-yarder to beat the Giants back in whatever that was, week 2 or 3. But yeah, that was, and look, I don't want to start a controversy here, but the Eagles punter, Donnie Jones, I don't know, that's a little bit of cowardice. You're not stepping up and taking the field goals or the kickoffs, like not the kickoffs.
Well, I would argue that takes more courage to step up to your coach as the only other guy on the team paid for putting his foot on the ball and saying, hey, coach, you know, I don't think I'd be good enough to put my foot on the ball in that way. That takes some courage, because you know the coach is going to look at him cockeyed, at least initially.
Yeah, I'd like to hear how that conversation went. Coach of the week, who do you got, Andy?
I'll go with Doug Peterson for – being involved in that conversation with Donnie Jones and not losing his mind about, at least not that NBC saw on TV at all. And I also do it because of how impressed I am with the expansiveness of Philadelphia's offense.
Well, I was going to we'll go Eagles heavy, I guess. I'm going to give it to Deuce Staley just because I can't give you any sort of behind-the-scenes stuff on what they're doing with these running backs, but that's like a whole new running backs group that they're rotating in there this year. I mean, they just picked up Ajayi, but LeGarrette Blount and Corey Clement, those guys weren't here last year. Blount was a late offseason pickup, so
good call.
They're breaking some new guys in, and they're really not missing a beat with all these new dudes. So Deuce Staley.
Only once in my career at the Senior Bowl have I gone up and then out of the blue to a coach who I don't know in some fashion already, introduced myself and kind of picked his brain, fanboy style. And that coach was Deuce Staley, who sits right up in the stands, back corner of the end zone every single year at the Senior Bowl. That was a few years ago. And it went okay. It went fine. He would never remember me, but it went fine. He was nice enough.
He was besides his playing career, obviously, we all remember his playing career. The thing that stands out to me for him was I worked with Robert Klemko on that Dalvin Cook feature we did in the lead up to the draft and sort of the stories behind some of the politicking behind some of the red flags that had come up with Cook. But Deuce Staley was featuring it because he had apparently told Dalvin Cook's grandma, "We're coming to get Dalvin. Eagles are coming to get Dalvin." So that was sort of the, and that was also one of those things where we wrote this long 4,000-word story that took weeks to pull together, I was up for two straight nights dealing with the legal department on what we could or could not say, and then all anyone read was Deuce Staley told Dalvin Cook's grandma that we're going to draft Dalvin Cook. Because that's media in 2017.
It's a headline-grabbing world.
And that's a wrap for the show. That was it.
Good.
Do you want to give out any more awards? Do we want to make up any new awards?
No, I mean, I'm not prepared. I mean, I barely prepared for the awards we give out.
I was going to say.
We probably better just roll with this.
You despise the four that we do. Donnie Jones, though. I'm disappointed in Donnie Jones. I guess that's what I want the main takeaway of the show to be.
I get asked all the time by non-football people, like a friend or someone who's watching, yeah, hey, why doesn't a kicker and punter, why isn't it just one guy that does it all? And I don't have an answer for that, but I've heard apparently it's radically different. Like it's like asking a pitcher to all of a sudden play catcher or something. It's, I guess, the motions of kicking are radically different. And it must be true because someone would have found a hybrid kicker punter by now, don't you think?
Well, we talked about this, I want to say maybe a year and a half ago or something like that, and we sort of discussed it. They're different body types. These punters are all long, lanky guys, and the kickers tend to be little short guys. I guess, I don't know, maybe that makes it easier to kick something off the ground. But I'm gonna stall real quick and look this guy up because the Falcons did that. Boy, who was it? Oh, my goodness. The Falcons did it. Somebody emailed us last time we talked about this. The Falcons had and it was fairly recently, recently being like in the last 20 years, they had a kicker slash punter, and he was a punter by trade, but they wanted to save the roster spot, and he went out and he missed like four field goals in his first game, and they sort of said, all right, let's not do that.
Well, next week's show, somebody can tweet us, promote our Twitter now, and then we'll be fine.
That's the cliffhanger. And I will fill in the cliffhanger that we left weeks ago when Aaron Rodgers first got hurt. Andy, the preseason leader in completion percentage.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
this. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I remember forgetting about it.
I know.
We never actually said it. And if anyone's still listening at this point in the show, they probably remember too, because these are hardcore listeners now.
I just want to I want to provide an answer to something. So the answer was Colt McCoy.
All right.
All right. That is now a wrap for the show. And we will come back next week or possibly just a month from now with the name of that kicker slash punter for the Falcons who missed all the kicks. Thanks as always to our producers, Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil. of Cadence 13. Those guys are the best. They always make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I cannot believe you are still listening, but thank you for sticking around. As always, Andy and I love to hear what you think of the show. If you have any specific questions, stuff you want to hear us talk about, just contact us. You can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GGremling_SI. We're both on Facebook or talkback at themmqb.com if you want to send it via electronic mail. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including themmqb.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.